All right. My name is Aaron Heinrich. I'm a faculty research assistant at Oregon State University, and I'm going to take you to a completely different production system. In Western Oregon, you know, I think the only soybean-related crop we grow is basically edamame, which is soybeans, but the edible version. Just give you a little background about our research. In 2010, our research faculty updated our sweet corn management guide, and in this guide, they incorporated the last 30 years of extension data. And so for the soil test phosphorus recommendations, by the way, we used the Bray test, the data came from the 80s, so that data was over 30 years old. So we had the question, you know, do these recommendations from the 80s still hold up? You know, and like you know, a lot can change in 35 years. So what's changed since the 80s? Well, we have newer hybrids. Our yields in when the studies were done was about 8.6 tons per acre. You know, we've by 2012 we're up to about 10.1, so we have higher yields. Also, in the early 90s, we had a big problem with root rot on corn. And then they were thinking that it wasn't really diagnosed well until the 90s. And so there's this idea that maybe the research was done with a background of root rot. So there's kind of two competing hypotheses here. You know, we have higher yields, so maybe we need more phosphorus. But if we have root rot resistant varieties with a good root system, maybe we can actually reduce phosphorus use. So competing hypothesis. Also, what's changed is soil test phosphorus levels. So I found some extension data going back to the 60s and 70s. And what I found is that over since 1978, we've almost doubled our soil test phosphorus levels. So those of you that are more familiar with Malic, Bray and Malic are about equal is what we've found. So we have really high soil test phosphorus levels, and so we also are interested in trying to give growers recommendations to kind of slow this trend. Right now in Oregon, we don't really have any regulatory pressure. You know, we're a different system. We get all our rain in the winter, so we flush out our system. It's cold. We don't really have these problems with eutrophication, but that doesn't mean that at some point regulation isn't going to come in. So our objectives, determine if our current recommendations are appropriate for these newer hybrids. Are our rates agronomically and environmentally sound? And then we're also curious if we could reduce or eliminate our starter fertilizer. And we're more interested in early versus late planted corn. We know early when the soil is cold, less supply, versus later when it's warmed up. So we had six field trials. Four were on farm, and two were on a research farm. We banded fertilizer 0, 15, 30, 60, 120 pounds per acre at planting, and then we would measure ear quality uptake. Uptake data only was we only did in 2013. So to band the fertilizer, we used a very advanced technology that most of you probably have never even used. This is our high-tech fertilizer bander. It's a 1950s Planet Junior. How many of you have had the pleasure of using one of these? So yeah. It's you know, you don't get a lot of farm cred for using this, but you know, it does actually really good job. We've been using this on multiple crops and we've had good results. You know, so in Oregon we suggest you put your band 2 inches over from the seed and 2 inches under. With this fertilizer bander, you know, we're probably about 4 inches over and 1 inch under. All right. So results, not too exciting. There's not much happening. You know, there was no yield increase by the starter fertilizer on any of the sites, any of the years. The soil test levels are in orange, and that's again Bray soil test levels. And what you can see is that we had very high soil test phosphorus levels. And it didn't matter the planting date. So whether it was a May planting date where the soils were cooler, or it was a later planting date where the soils had warmed up, if you have high soil test phosphorus, the temperature didn't seem to make any difference. So in the second year, we actually wanted to find sites with lower soil test phosphorus, and this is actually a challenge from the data I showed you, is that most farms have very high soil test phosphorus levels. We did find one site that had 42 ppm at the research farm, and then this other one far right, 135 ppm, that farmer told us he had a soil test level of 50, and we didn't verify it, so we basically have one site that's kind of below the threshold that we've, that's in the current nutrient management guide. So I'm just going to focus on that site with the lower soil test phosphorus level. So what we found is that that band fertilizer did increase growth and phosphorus uptake at V6. So you can see that biomass is pretty much doubled by banding the fertilizer, and that OSU's kind of current recommended rate is about 60, and that's where we're seeing, you know, max growth and phosphorus uptake at V6. But, you know, come harvest, you can't see any difference. And this is what we've seen over and over. We've done studies with pop-up fertilizer on soils that have kind of similar soil test values. And, yeah, they look great, you know, but then when you get to harvest, there's no difference. So we also threw in some PRS probes, plant root simulators. And, you know, we just threw them in just trying to see if we can learn something from them. You know, as you know, a soil test doesn't tell you how well kind of the supply of phosphorus, you know, the supply is, it's based on, you know, soil temperature, microbial activity, moisture. So we threw this in. So it's basically an anion exchange resin. Put it in every 2 weeks, or put it in and take it out every 2 weeks for 8 weeks. And I'm just going to focus on one site. So this was at the research farm. It was one field. Just the only difference between the two fields is the planting date. One was planted early May. The other was planted in late June. As you can see, the difference, there was some difference in the soil test phosphorus level, which I can't really explain because they were side by side. This is a research farm, and there's a lot of stuff that goes on there, small plots that there could have been a history that we don't know about. But you can see from the temperature, you know, the early May, you're starting out lower soil temperature and slowly moving up. In the June planting, start higher and go down. The shaded area is the time period where we have the PRS probes actually in the ground. So what we found, you know, higher soil temperature, the supply rate was increased by almost 80% with just a 7% increase in soil temperature, average soil temperature over this time period. You know, it's actually, it seems a little higher than I've seen in the literature. Tim Hartz from UC Davis and Vegetable Cropping System, he did some work with these, not with the PRS probes, but an anion exchange resin, and he saw a 2% increase in supply of phosphorus per degree Fahrenheit increase in temperature. But, so this tells us, right, you know, we are getting more supply under these warmer soils, but under high soil test conditions, we see no difference in yield. So again, it goes back to it, when you have high soil test phosphorus, you know, cold soil temperatures aren't having an effect. So what's the outcome of this? Well, so this data set's pretty small, doesn't necessarily encompass the range that we really wanted, but, you know, it was done under the, you know, current conditions, which is high soil test phosphorus levels, and so basically just says, yeah, our recommendations are probably good. You know, we can eliminate or minimize phosphorus fertilizer. Soil temperature is not important when soil test phosphorus is high. When it's high, it's high. It's gonna supply what the crop needs. And then when soil test phosphorus is high, we're encouraging growers to use fertilizers with a higher N to P ratio. One of the challenges we have is you go onto these farms and maybe a farmer has a giant tank, a 1034, and if he's trying to meet his nitrogen requirements, his pre-plant nitrogen requirements with that 1034, he puts on 20 pounds of nitrogen, he's putting on 70 pounds of phosphorus. So we're kind of encouraging these farmers to get blends that have a higher nitrogen level. So what are the kind of the, you know, as working in extension, you know, I like the research, but I'm also, I like the sociology of figuring out, you know, how do we get farmers to adopt these practices ultimately, right? Some of the challenges, you know, farmers are risk averse. You know, I give them a recommendation and they get a yield loss. Well, for me, I kind of, that's my reputation, that sucks, but for them, you know, that's, they're losing money. We have a lot of small fields. Our field sizes are typically under 100 acres, and farmers have a lot of these little fields. So to get one fertilizer blend that's specific to a certain site may be difficult. You know, we all know there's variability in soil testing. You know, if you're getting one soil test for an 80-acre field and you're basing your rates on that, you know, if you're at 50 ppm, you're going to have some areas that are lower soil test phosphorus, some that are higher. So there's kind of a hesitation to, you know, leave off any phosphorus. Historical inertia, you know, it's what's been done for a long time. That's kind of slowly changing. I mean, part of the reason we did this research was also just to generate some new data that we can just bring to extension meetings and just kind of get a conversation going. So even though it wasn't extensive, it at least allowed us to engage the growers. And there's a lot of young growers that have approached me and said that they're starting to reduce their rates, but then when I find out what they reduced them to, it's still really high. But at least we're making some incremental changes. Then you have the ag supply companies. So their party line is you put on starter fertilizer, even if you have high soil test phosphorus, you put it on in the spring. You know, they're, you know, cold soil conditions, you just got to put it on. So we're kind of going up against the field men a little bit, who are making a lot of these decisions for the farmer. How do we get over this? Well, you know, grid soil sampling, precision ag, you know, variable rate technology. A few farmers are starting to adopt that, but again, we have really small acreage farms and small fields. And then we just say, put on an insurance rate, put on 15 to 30 pounds. You know, they're comfortable doing that. They're not comfortable just leaving everything off. Then I'll just kind of end here. So what are the drivers of adoption? Well, we don't really have environmental regulations that are right now. There's always that specter of environmental regulations. Right now, really, the economics are driving it. And we've been able to make a good case that, you know, based on their current rates, you know, if you can reduce it by this much, you know, you can get a good return. All right, so with that, the research was funded by the Oregon Processed Vegetable Commission. I just want to thank all the people that helped out, our harvest crew. Any questions?
We've got 2 minutes for questions before the lunch break.
Aaron, is there a resistance to grid sampling to get to for them to pay for the tests and so on to get some sort of variability? And, you know, I assume that there's correlation.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess, so I guess the question, let's see if I understood it, is that has there been kind of maybe some kind of correlating different soil properties with phosphorus levels,
yeah,
or?
More than that, more the social end of it, is there, mm-hmm. do you see a resistance to spending money to try to identify those highs and lows that are in the field based on soil properties?
It really depends on the grower. So this is an example of a soil map from one of the growers I work with. And his farm is only 450 acres, small farm. He doesn't have any variable rate fertilizer technology, but he's seeing the benefit of it. I mean, in this field, you can see one half of it is really high. The other half is kind of at that threshold level. And so even though he doesn't have the variable rate technology, he's able to manage his system by managing his plantings. In this planting, I don't put any phosphorus on here, I put minimal. So there is, I think people are seeing the benefits. I think the challenge is, again, a lot of the farmers, I only know a couple farmers that I work with that actually have the variable rate technology. So a lot of them don't necessarily see the benefit because, like, I get this map, I look at it, I file it away, and that's it. So I'm trying to get them to look at it in this way. Like, you can still do grid sampling. It gives you a good story. Hopefully you can glean something from it that'll help you, and then maybe in the future, you know, if you do it again, you can see how your levels are changing, and then maybe at some point the variable rate technology will be cheap enough or they'll adopt it. So there is... Yeah. People are interested in the grid soil sampling, but yeah, the cost it's not cheap. So I don't know if that quite answered your question, but
yeah, it does. It just sounds like it puts put you in a more personal situation with each grower. They really need your help to determine how they're going to, you know, is it feasible for them to do that? In this case, obviously, it's doable without IPEC.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the application goes.
Yeah, definitely.
Any other questions?
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.